Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and girls making a difference and the males by their side, men and boys. As 53% of eligible U.S. voters and 50% of the world's population, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, environmental, and legal arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI, or the board, volunteers, sponsors, or programmers at KKFI. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart in the studio with Amy Bell and Ebony Johnson, co-hosts of Every Woman. And our guests today are Alice Kitchen and Jane McLean with the Women's Equality Coalition, which, by the way, I would like to say Every Woman is also a member of the Women's Equality Coalition. And we'll begin with them in a few minutes to kick off Women's History Month. But first, we're going to go to Ebony with some news for us today.
Thank you, Sharon. Women and children crossing together illegally into the United States could be separated by U.S. authorities under a proposal being considered by the Department of Homeland Security, according to three government officials. Part of the reason for the proposal is to deter mothers from migrating to the United States with their children, said the officials, who have been briefed on the proposal. The policy shift would allow the government to keep parents in custody while they contest deportation or wait for asylum hearings. Children would be put into protective custody with the Department of Health and Human Services in the, quote, least restrictive setting, until they can be taken into the care of a U.S. relative or state-sponsored guardian, The Guardian reported March 3rd. 100 women's organizations have signed on to the following letter, which is titled Women's Community Letter to Trump Administration 2017. As advocates for women's rights, equality, justice, and inclusion, we have come together to outline core domestic policy priorities that will help ensure that all women in the United States have the opportunity to succeed and thrive. From criminal justice reform to health policy, from education to workplace policy, from income security to violence prevention, and from child care to a fair and just immigration system. It is critical that the administration address and promote women's interests in each of the policy decisions it makes. Women's success has been the nation's success. When we have an equal opportunity to succeed, our entire society and economy benefit. And Amy has something to read as well.
So we're hopefully going to, every week during Women's History Month, share a woman from history. And I brought one in today that is a little non-traditional. I recently went to the National Holocaust Memorial Museum in D.C., and when you go there, you're given a person that you kind of develop the story with as you walk through it. And so I wanted to read the story of the woman whose story kind of touched me when I went through the museum. And her name was Sarah Yudlowitz. She was born around 1899 in Liepāja, Latvia. Sarah was born Sarah Gamper, was one of four children born to a Jewish family in the Baltic port city of Liepāja. Her parents owned a general store there. At the outbreak of World War I, Sarah was studying piano at a conservatory in Russia. During World War I, she remained there to serve as a nurse. She returned to Liepāja after marrying Hermann Yudlowitz in 1920 and settled there. From 1933 to 1939, Sarah and Hermann operated a shoe store in the front of their small shoe workshop. By 1935, they had three daughters, Fanny, Jenny, and Libelle. Sarah and Hermann were Zionists, and they often helped collect money for Jewish settlers to buy land in Palestine. From 1940 to 1943. In June 1941, the Germans reached Latvia and occupied Liepāja. That July, Hermann was murdered by the Germans in a nearby village. For 2 years, Sarah and her daughters managed to avoid deportation because Fanny had protected status as a nurse. But in October 1943, they were deported to Kaiserwald near Riga. On arriving, the deportees were divided, those able to work on one side, the infirm and the young on the other. 8-year-old LaBelle was sent with the young. Sarah would not abandon LaBelle and followed. Sarah and LaBelle were never heard from again.
Gosh, that was sad. Thank you, Amy.
Well, you don't know how it's going to end until you get to the end when you walk through it. And in particular, right now, we are seeing horrific anti-Semitism. And, you know, Sarah Yudlowitz didn't do the great things that a lot of the women that are on your wall did. But I think right now, and in this time, I wanted to remember her and her daughter, LaBelle, who lost their lives in the Holocaust.
We are in a really, really, I don't know, it's very stressful and very unreal to even imagine that what is happening in the United States now. And this being Women's History Month, March for the full month, we invited our first guest to be here from the Women's Equality Coalition. And as I said earlier, Jane McLean and Alice Kitchen are here to talk to us today about the Women's Equality Coalition, how it formed, why, what's coming up, and what can we expect. And what have you been doing? I know, Jane, we should say, Jane has the Women's Wall of Achievement. Is that what you call it, Jane?
Yeah, well, I call it the Wall of Women's Achievement. We could call it the Women's Wall of Achievement. We could say Great Women of Achievement.
Yeah. Achievement being the key word here.
Yeah.
As women, we all try to be achievers, obviously, and it seems though it's very hard because we can never achieve enough because of the patriarchy, I would say. Whatever we do is never enough.
Yeah, it seems as if we have a big wall that we have to manage, or maybe we just call it the ceiling. But I thought, I was here last Women's History Month and talked about it. I thought that I could start talking about women's equality by letting you know some of the women that I have added to the board from 2016. Okay. But first of all, for those of you who don't know about the Wall of Women's Achievement, it is an 11-panel montage. It chronicles women's journey since winning the vote in 1920. There are over 400 women from the fields of art, business, politics, religion, science, sports, and technology that are identified individually and their achievement described on the wall. The diverse faces of women from social, economic groups, and walks of life are there to create a visual rehearsal of the invaluable contributions women have made to the life of our country as we strive towards full equality. Excuse me. Each year in January and February, I work on updating it, and this year had to add another panel. And what struck me this year was the diversity that is coming through on the wall. And that struck me especially with the women who were at the Olympics this year. In the 1912 Olympics in London, women for the first time were awarded more medals than the American men. And they continued to do that this year and even expanded it just a little bit more. But when I put things up, there was the women's artistic gymnastics team this year had two African Americans, Simone Biles and Gabrielle Douglas. They had one Latina, Laura Hernandez, and to pick up on what Amy said, Allie Raymond was there again, and she is Jewish. So the one left, whose name blanks right now because I left my notes at home, was there, but they were there. And then you had the first African-American to win a medal in women's swimming in the Olympics.
It was a really fun Olympics to watch this year, and I think after everything that's happened over the past year, it's very nice to sit here and think about what a really actually wonderful summer it was for women.
Yes.
Challenging though, a lot of the women that you've mentioned had huge critiques from the media about whether they were smiling or holding their heart correctly over when they had the national anthem, or there was one swimmer, I don't think it was an American swimmer, who set a record of some sort, and the news panned over to her husband, who was her coach, and said, "Oh my goodness, he is so excited. He coached her so well." I mean, they went to her husband before they went to her, who had just set the record. So, kind of a fun, interesting time. I mean, there was a lot of things to celebrate last summer. I'm glad that, thank you for bringing that up.
I have a question. Were those male news people, or are females doing that to women too?
You know, it's typically both anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they just still some really special ideas about women and sports, and especially on the sports of the gymnastics in particular. Mm-hmm. They treat it like it's baton twirling or something that's really just about looking pretty and, oh, isn't that special? But what Simone Biles did was
absolutely
insane
amazing
athleticism.
Oh, it was. And it always, when I'm writing about it, I technically this is the women's artistic gymnastics sort of, and I don't remember there's anything like men's artistic gymnastics, but maybe there is, but you don't hear about it.
When the men do gymnastics, they have these displays of strength. They're on the rings with their arms outstretched and showing how they can, like, maneuver their body, and it's just very focused on their strength. And when the women do their gymnastics routine, there's the floor routine, which they have to shake their butt while doing.
Gracefully.
Yes. And then, but then you've got, Gabby Douglas was she was one of the longest running gymnasts,
I
believe.
Think so,
she
yeah.
did the most Olympics or something like that. She was, she didn't have her best Olympics this year because she was really at the end of what a gymnast career could be. And Simone Biles was doing maneuvers that they didn't even realize it was possible for humans to twist around that much. But, you know, all of that had to be done while shaking their butts and wearing massive amounts of makeup. And then they were told they didn't smile enough.
You wanted to say, well, you try this and
yeah.
smile.
The men don't have to smile. It's not required as part of the grading rubric, I think. So I don't.
Oh, well, there was one other American woman who was the first American woman, and she also happened to be African-American, to win the shot put. Ever since the shot put became a women's sport in 1948. So I think it's really just to be the first woman, period, and you just happen to be African-American, is something special too. But the diversity wasn't limited to the Olympics or sports, which you sometimes think are more diverse than other fields of endeavor. I think of Carla Hayden, who became the 14th congressional librarian. This year, she's also, again, the first woman, and she also happens to be African-American, which just really pushes the image of equality for women across races. And I don't know if you all remember, but she was the president of the American Library Association back in 2004, 2003, when the Patriots Act was being passed, and she's the one that objected to the FBI being able to get into library users' files, what they'd checked out. So she has a history of standing up for the rights of librarians and as well as for people who use the libraries to have privacy. But it doesn't stop there. There's more. I decided to look in and find out who the woman was that wrote Hidden Figures, the story of the African-American women who helped win the space race. Her name is Margot Lee Shetterly. And, of course, we all know about the movie that was adapted from it. Just a bit about her. She grew up in Hampton, Virginia. And one of the lines that I found, a quote from her, was she said, "I knew so many African-Americans working in science, math, and engineering that I thought that's just what black folk did." They were all around her. Her father was a scientist. Her mother was a college professor. Her uncles were in science or doctors or dentists. But discovering these women who were the human computers, who were just part of being erased from history and who were instrumental in the space race is just fantastic.
I just wanted to pop in while we were talking about the women that were discovered by the public. I mean, a lot of people knew about them before. The fact that we just found out about them doesn't mean it's really news. But I feel like in the past year, I have learned a lot more history and women's involvement in history, and we're hearing more of these stories, and people are finding it more important to tell these stories now. And it seems like a really exciting time for women's history. Are you getting overwhelmed?
Just about. I know it's so that now I know enough people, and I'm reminded, you know, they're the two women, it turns out this is 2015, who passed the test to be Rangers. And you find out about them, you find out Margot Shetterly was about 41 years old when she started researching this, and it just became such a passion for her that in the midst of it, she started the Human Computer Project to archive the work that these women had done. She knew that she was onto something. She had been in media before. She had been a writer, and she and her husband had published a magazine in Mexico called for 11 years. And she just is an amazing person herself, and to take women and to let them know of the other women. I do have the names of the three women that were in the movie, Katherine Johnson, Mary Jackson, and Dorothy Vaughan. They're going to be put on the wall in the appropriate years. So, yeah, it was there, and then in the...
In the appropriate years, do you mean they're going to be, like, retroactively added to the walls when they were...
When they were active, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought about that, and it means rearranging the whole panel. But
that's where they belong.
That's where they belong. That's where their place is in history. So I'll just have to decide. The elections also were more diverse. You know, even though you don't hear about it, there was much for women to celebrate in the congressional elections. There was a new crop of feminists elected to Congress. So I put them on the wall just for their achievement of being elected, and now we'll go on to see what they do. But there were four new women senators, and three of them were women of color. Kamala Harris from California, who is an African-American and South Asian. Tammy Duckworth, we all know about the little comment that was made about her Thai birth. saying, how did she make it, they make it to the American Revolution? Well, her father was a Vietnam veteran. His family made it to the American Revolution. And there's Catherine Cortez Masto from Nevada. And she's the first Latina woman ever elected to the Senate. And then there were seven new feminist women representatives who were elected to the House of Representatives, and five of them are women of color, from Vietnam, from Latina, East Indian, and then another woman who is Jewish. So
I am always amazed when in 2017 I'm hearing things like first blank woman, first woman without the blank, I don't know, mm-hmm. without the qualifiers. It's always shocking that we haven't had a Latina senator prior to this year.
I think we've had a Latino senator, but not a Latina.
That is always shocking. I mean, you don't. It's also amazing sometimes you don't know what we haven't gotten around to doing yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep going.
It does keep going.
Just keep going.
And many, or two or three of these, I forget which ones they were, are the children of immigrants. People who worked to get them through college, and they went on from there. And I know, you know, I mentioned, well, we'll see what they do, but I've seen Kamala Harris several times on TV responding to things in the Senate in a very powerful way.
So were these some of the women that showed up to that whatever joint address of Congress the other night wearing all white?
I miss that, but they may have been.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The Democratic women showed up in all white to symbolize the suffragists, and they didn't stand, and it was wonderful stuff going on there.
Yeah, I was busy preparing for a presentation. I wish my husband had called me in so I could have seen more of that.
Well, I had to hear it described on the radio, but I saw some pictures later. It was very inspiring.
Okay, now the one person that's missing is the presidential election and Hillary Clinton. And last year, I doubt that anybody remembers, but I saved my notes. When I was talking about the women who ran for the presidency, mm-hmm. With that book from Ellen Fitzpatrick, The Highest Glass Ceiling, well, she pointed out that the two things that blocked women running for the presidency, stopped them, like Shirley Chisholm or Margaret Chase Smith, was money. Mm-hmm. And Hillary had money this year. And not too surprisingly, it was also used against her. Never mind that's how many of the men got their money, so they could run for president. And then the second one, and more basically, was the belief that men were more suited to leadership than women. Now, that's one way of stating it. Really, it's the mindset of male superiority as it has manifested itself in U.S. And Western society, for that part. Now, Gloria Steinem, I've noticed, has sort of not quite sanitized it, but puts it more inclusively, that it's the belief in the hierarchical system that there are some that are better than others and therefore more suited. Well, as I said, we'll see in 2016 if the two major obstacles, money and the mindset that men are more suited for leadership, can be overcome. If so, a woman will win the nomination of the Democratic Party and run in the general election for president. And that happened. Hillary Clinton won the Democratic nomination for president, the first woman to win the nomination of a major party for president of the United States. And that's why she's up front and center on the Wall of Women's Achievement. But she did not overcome the hierarchy system that was put in place by our founding fathers in the Electoral College. And that, over the years, has been molded to maintain sort of a wall between the people and the state political parties. But enough people did believe that a qualified woman was suited to lead over an inexperienced man to win the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. So my art teacher proposes that when you paint a picture, you ought to put a little surprise item in for the people that look close. Yeah. Well, this summer I went to a rally with Elizabeth Warren and got her signature, and it came back to me. It said, "Keep fighting, Elizabeth." That's on my board, too.
God's sake, that's what I'm for.
Well, we need to take a station break, so we'll be right back with the second half of Every Woman.
On the next Interfaith Voices, recovering the experiences of women in religion.
The Jewish tradition has hundreds of blessings for every aspect of experience, but there's never been a blessing for childbirth. There's never been a blessing for weaning.
I'm Maureen Fiedler, an introduction to feminist theology.
Tuesday at noon, right after your Fusion Funkmeister.
Able to escape what has dogged every other president in the last 40 years. The rage and anger for a different system that will not treat them in the same way.
On Friday, March the 24th, college professor, economist, author, and radio personality Dr. Richard Wolff will be the featured guest at a meet-and-greet dinner followed by a talk entitled Trump's Economic Strategy and What to Do About It. Details of this KKFI fundraiser and ticket information at kkfi.org.
This is Sharon Lockhart. We're back with Every Woman with Amy Bell and Ebony Johnson, co-hosts, and we have Joe Jackson engineering for us today. He's in training and doing a fine job. And our guests today are Jane McLean and Alice Kitchen of the Women's Equality Coalition. And Jane has been talking to us about her, I'm going to get it backwards again, Women's Wall of Achievement. Women's Wall of Women's Achievement. Just so you get the achievement in there,
that's
in
right.
Women, that's the important part. And do you have anything more you want to tell us about that?
No, except that if you... Never mind. I just came from a program with the federal employees, and it was interesting, and went on to look at some of the other hidden figures. But I think it's just going to grow. It's on its last panel. It's going to go to 2020.
And Alice... You're very instrumental in forming this coalition. I think probably the two of you. How many years ago did the Women's Equality Coalition begin?
I think it's now 5 years ago, I think we started. And every year we focus on women getting the vote and discrimination against women in many ways, in the equity for pay and also domestic violence. And one of the things that always strikes me is that when we're talking, the general public doesn't know that women do not have equal rights. We are not in the Constitution. We are not in the Constitution.
Can you say, what do you mean by we are not in the Constitution?
We are not in any of the amendments. We're not in the Articles.
Well, we're in the one amendment.
Which is?
19th.
Well, we in the
we get
sense
the vote.
Of we have the vote, but we don't have equal rights.
Right.
And that, thank you, very important. But if you have the vote and it doesn't matter, I mean, that's what I struggle with this year. We have the vote, but we need to make sure that people are, A, registered and that they go to the polls, and also that they do their homework. And I think that there are many women's organizations out there that do a lot around education of voters and registration. The League of Women Voters, AAUW, are a part of the coalition, and we cannot emphasize enough how important using the vote, making it count, is so important. And I would just add that, so we don't have the equal rights, And it's come close in the past, but it hasn't happened. And we have talked to our senators again this year about that, and we need to keep going forward.
So I'm going to jump in there on when we're talking about the Equal Rights Amendment, correct, in the same wording that it had. So we're not changing it. Are we at a point where procedurally we have to start over?
Well, that question has many answers, and some people say no. And there's a number of strategies. There's also two proposals before the Senate, and Benjamin Cardine, I think of Maryland, has proposed legislation again, which he has done every year. That is out there. And then there's Resolution 5, a joint resolution. These are, and Resolution 6, are in the process and just need to be brought to the tables to move along. So they do different things. But you're right, the wording is like two sentences. It's very simple. And it needs to happen. It needs to get some push. And it's somehow people think that's about the last thing on the agenda that is of importance today, but it's not. It's very important to all of us. And the reason that women are stopped, the patriarchy, of course, how the hierarchy prevents women, but if we had the equal rights, we wouldn't have had the settlement around the Walmart case. Remember the Walmart? It was a class action. They couldn't figure out what to do with it, so they just, you know, punted it. And then the UPS case, which was women pregnancy and conditions that were different for women. And there's domestic violence cases where women don't have the same protections as men do. So one thing I want to call your attention to is that at UMKC in the Student Union on March 15th, 5 o'clock in room 402, we're going to have the film Equal Means Equal, and this is a documentary that walks through why we need the Equal Rights Amendment. And there are the first, the legal section, and then there's domestic violence, women in the criminal justice system, and women's health care, and so forth. So,
you know, and 2017 might be a year where ERA starts looking up because of all the celebrity deaths last year, by far my favorite was Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes. Phyllis Schlafly is not on the wall of women's achievement.
She did achieve something rather monumental.
Yes,
she managed to prevent women from having constitutional rights.
Okay.
Impressive achievement, actually.
I use it as artistic discrimination.
Oh. You almost need to have a shadow wall of evil women.
I started out doing that and putting them in the lower left-hand corner. But then there became too many women who achieved such positive things that I needed the space. So, yeah, like on first on the 1920, I had the first young lady that won the Miss America contest, who was a senator's daughter. Down there on the thing. But the only place it's left is on the suffragist where I show some cartoons that were in opposition.
We could open our telephone lines here. I understand that the League of Women Voters may be listening today, and they might want to call in with something to add. It's 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534.
Alice, you mentioned domestic violence. Can you speak to any new things that you're seeing in domestic violence? Are there significant changes that are being made in that area? That any research or information you have as far as what the Women's Equality Coalition does with around that area?
Well, I can speak to why the ERA needs to pass relative to domestic violence. The case that is cited in the book by Jessica Neuwirth that we had presented in a previous Women's Equality Week Coalition, that case was Jennifer Gonzalez in Colorado, and she was being abused by her husband, and she was trying to get protection. She had three young children, and she filed all the court orders. And she did all of that. And those of us that have worked in criminal justice know that a court order is a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. It's a document, but you can't hold it up and it doesn't stop the gun or the harm from coming to the person directly or continuing the abuse. It just, if they do that and the police come, then they have an actual case.
Yeah, and if the police come is really the key word here.
And that's the key word because in the case, they didn't come. She had done all the proper notification and paperwork and addresses that were needed, and they didn't protect her. And one of the things that we want from our government, and we gladly pay taxes for, among things, is public safety. And so it didn't happen. And what happened was that he ended up shooting their three children and then turned the gun on himself. And here she is left. And so she filed cases in Colorado, and in the long run, it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. She didn't prevail. And that's why we have to have the Equal Rights Amendment. She did not prevail. The UPS case on pregnancy and the workforce and Walmart discrimination, wages, and roles of management and so forth. They didn't pass because we don't have equal rights.
Well, and the Violence Against Women Act is also significantly watered down because it's legal to discriminate against women. If it's reasonable discrimination, it can't be, you know, you're a woman, so I'm going to fire you for that, unless they have a good reason. Like, you know, a while back they decided women couldn't fight in combat, you know. So it's a pretty it's really depressing. We think of things like Title IX as protecting women. Title IX is not a constitutional amendment, and we're going to, I think a lot of people would be surprised at how different laws would turn out if the courts were required to recognize women as full, equal human beings, because they're just not right now.
And on the domestic violence discussion, I would encourage callers to call in and raise points that we need to have the public know in general. But it's a very difficult situation. The shelters that we have long waiting lists. They have high volume. And there have been some improvements. You were asking about how that has evolved. The centers work with and the advocates work with the police, and they have what they call a lethality assessment tool, so that when law enforcement's called out to investigate a situation, then they have to gather data and information based on certain criteria that are indicators of needing attention or more attention or actual taking to shelter. It's a very, I mean, we're living in 2017 and women are still at risk in their communities, and they get away with it and they're ashamed of it. So we have to work on both sides, the shame, the embarrassment, and then the fact they need a place to be and their children need to be able to go with them. Their pets can go with them to some of these shelters. They're doing a wonderful job, but the police find these kind of calls, and this was from personal observation on a ride-along, these are the kind of calls that they least like, because no telling what can happen, and they are at risk, as is the victim.
Well, I do kind of want to push back a little bit on the concept that the Equal Rights Amendment would help women. It would certainly make me feel better to have full rights as a citizen on paper, but we also know that there are other constitutional amendments giving rights, freeing slaves, and bringing equal rights to African American citizens. It's there on paper, but we still see violence. I don't believe that it is the amendment that saves you.
Mm-hmm. It's the enforcement and it's the attention. Mm-hmm. And it's funding. And you mentioned domestic violence.
But we're already not enforcing the amendments as they stand right now.
And the violence against women, I'm hoping people will call in because I'm worried that's going to be minimized, or some of the rights and funding that's in that provision.
Well, there's still a lot of paranoia that women just make up things. So, you know, you say I was abused. They say, well, she's just a liar. And it's really... That, to me, is one of the biggest struggles, is this idea that women make up crimes.
What did she do to make him hit her?
Yeah, it's just a strange amount of responsibility. That phone number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. And call us in, really, about anything that you'd like to see. It is Women's History Month. And we are moving towards Women's Equality Day. It's the 8th?
International.
Yeah, International Women's Day.
March the 8th.
Yes. Right. So go ahead and share with us what you would like to see the movement towards equality look like. 816-931-5534. And, you know, share your concerns. Share your vision. Because it's not simple. This is a messy process that we've got here. One of the downsides of democracy is that it takes us a long time to figure out what we want to do.
I was watching a PBS special. It was a documentary behind the scenes of the making of the Hamilton play last night. And one of the things that struck me is, as they were talking about the founding fathers, emphasis on that, and even with Anthony Hamilton and just making, they were saying in the room about that money really was about power, and, you know, just talking from that standpoint. And then also one of the scenes they brought up about when Anthony Hamilton had an affair, but his wife had all these children and no money, and she wasn't going to, you know, it was hard for her to really leave him. And I'm just thinking, and that's today. I mean, I personally know women who are still staying with their husbands because they don't believe that they could actually leave and be financially secure. And this was all of those years ago, and we still feel that same way. And so it brings up a real question for me about a lot of things. This with women, though, in particular, I'll say, if it really was about the founding fathers and them making a government and system that is to their benefit, can we really amend our way through that?
I think that that is one of the most excellent questions that we're afraid to ask, because it sounds so unpatriotic. We are raised to believe that the Constitution, by its nature, is what the country... It's so much us that it can't be deconstructed. Mm-hmm. And it's not working in a lot of places. Will more amendments fix that? I mean, the founding fathers even, and let's not even forget about the founding mothers who were sitting there with letters telling them, stop ignoring women. And they ignored that and continued to ignore women. But they at least acknowledged that you do have to start from scratch every now and then because things change. They knew that at the time. And we are sitting here today going, nope, we got to do it like it was in 1776.
Well, that's because it suits the males in power. It fits them. I mean, it maintains the status quo.
I think partly as we want to work towards women's equality is that part of the problem is that we don't have enough women in government. We don't have enough women any place. I think we have to remember that women have been inferior to men systematically for almost, well, easily 3,000 years, if not 5,000 years. So that when we look at what we need to do, it means that we have to change the whole thing, that until we get men and women equal, as I say, so that every man gets up every morning and says three times, I am merely equal, I am merely equal, I am merely equal. we're going to have to work at it. The thing is that getting from point A to point B, how do you throw out the bathwater without throwing out the baby?
Well, but it does run so deep because it's not just men that need to wake up and say, I'm merely equal, but it is also all white people who need to say, I am merely equal.
Yes, that's true.
It is all people who are in the upper 10, 1%, 10% of income holders that need to wake up and say, I am merely equal. We have got a very broken social structure. And the treatment of women is a pretty noticeable symptom of that.
It's Amy, you saying that in this conversation makes me think about, I do not recall her name, but we had a guest last year, maybe even year before, from the Kansas, was it the Kansas Women's Center or the, it was, it's a Catholic affiliation. And she gave us bag, it's like a black bag with pink, or remember?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh,
was it the
Kansas Women, but anyway, at any rate, she made a comment. She said, women are equal and we act like it's so. And that's been coming up to me lately, the mere fact of acting like it's so. You know, it's one thing to keep saying like, well, we are, but it's a whole other force when you just act like it. You know what I mean? When you take a step to actually act like that, irregardless to if someone else sees me that way or not, you know, says, oh, well, you're a woman, and so that means this, that's their issue. But if I act that way, then that takes on a whole other level of freedom for me if I go ahead and behave that way, knowing what the other person thinks, but behaving that way anyway.
And I think what, I mean, because I feel like I've been very negative on this, because it is overwhelmingly terrible sometimes that I get stuck in this whole, like, nope, it's all bad, and even these things that you're saying, it's still going to be terrible. But the one thing, acting like you're equal, was really hard to do in 1920. It was really hard to do in 1940. It was maybe a little easier come like 1970. It was still really hard to do, though. It was maybe a little easier in 1980, a little easier in 1990. And by 2020, I think we're going to have generations of women who won't think otherwise.
But I would add that these young women who haven't had the long experience of history or haven't had a chance to see the panel of women's accomplishments, they don't really know the depth of how bad it was and sometimes still is. And if you see the film, Equal Means Equal, you'll see how bad it still is and needs to change. And it needs to change in law and in practice and enforcement.
But it's easier for each generation. It's gotten easier for them to act equal.
Okay.
But I'm all with you on being super negative about this, because really it's pretty bad.
I would like to interject and say that in my career, until I joined the financial services industry in 1980, I did not really feel that much discrimination. It was because I was respected by the man who owned the store where I operated a business. I grew up the oldest girl of four girls. My mother could do anything and was smart as a whip, graduated top of her class at age 16. I really didn't experience discrimination until I joined a group of men who really didn't want me there because I was competition. And it was, I would tell you, 16 years of hell before I became self-employed 20 years ago. So to say it was, it depends on your circumstances in life and how you're brought up, I think.
Right. And if you don't have that awareness, and one thing we're doing with the city of Kansas City and our coalition is trying to get them to do a gender analysis, because pay equity is probably something we can all agree on, right? Women should be paid what men are paid.
And we do actually have a caller on the line. Caller, could you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Hi, my name is Eva, and I'm calling from the hometown of Harry Nukeman Truman. How are you? I've been listening, and I'd like to add something because I've only caught parts of this, so I'm not quite sure. But the young lady who mentioned the fact of acting like you're equal, I think you have to take that further. I think you have to think you're equal. Part of it is our own mindsets that holds women back. I have a totally different upbringing from most women. I don't carry the baggage that you're talking about, and it was an accident. It was an accident in upbringing, and that was because I was never told I was less. I never thought I was less, and I never acted like I was less. So part of it is, if you want to change the other half of the population's perception of you, you have to stop not just acting like you're less, but thinking like you're less just because of how they treat you. You are letting them control the dialogue.
You know,
you have to take control of it.
Everybody in the studio right now is nodding their head and smiling along with you. But I want to ask you this question because I feel like I was raised the same way. I know most of us here feel that we were raised to really know that we were worth everything anybody else was.
I was raised in an ironic situation. I was raised as if and treated as if I was a male. Okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of us actually.
But I was never like, you can't do that because you're a girl. It didn't happen.
Right. No, not me neither. But I'm wondering, when you moved away from the family situation and you began to see other people in society who did seem to have this very strange idea that you wouldn't know how to change your own tire, that you wouldn't know.
I think that depends on which
math.
Context
people assume women don't know
but
math.
I never encountered that. I mean, I heard silly things, but no one ever dared say that to my face. And I remember going to college, and there were people who, you talked about how, you know, the times in which things get better, but in the 70s, and it was like sitting in a classroom and, you know, there's a discussion by the philosophy teacher as to, he raises the question, you know, in terms of gender roles. Who's ever, you know, whatever female's ever asked a male out, why is that a problem? And you have a discussion, and if your mentality is in that, you have to sit back and wait. It's not going to come to you because you're just going to wait. And if you want to change, you can't make them change, but you can change by change them by showing them something different. And if you act submissive, and if you act like poor little me, and you act like you're not giving me my rights, well, they're not going to give them to you. You have to take them. And besides, we are all born equal. We are born that way. We don't need a constitution. We don't need a piece of paper. You got to have it in your head that you are, we are all races, genders, equal. And when you start giving power to a construction, a mental construction, and you allow it to control you, well, the only thing you can do is change the construct. Do you understand? Am I making sense?
Yes, you're making perfect sense.
The question that I would raise is, that may be your mental concept, but until you change the mental concept of the whole society, it's not going to be that way for everybody. It can work for an individual. How do you do to make it for the
society? Society has got to want to change. It's like changing anyone else's negative behavior. You can't force it. They've got to come from within. It's got to come from that side.
How do you do that?
You have to stimulate it. You have to show that what they're thinking is wrong. You have to find some ways in which to communicate, and part of it is, like the other young lady says, it's what you show, it's what you act, it's what you say, and it's what you do. And when you refuse to be said, oh, you're this, and you say, no, I'm not, you have to speak up. You have to assert it. You have to show it. You have to demonstrate it. And that demonstrates it to everyone. And you will always have a segment that is not, it will be for whatever reason, is unable to change. That's going to be there. You can't get away from it.
You know, have you ever considered doing radio?
That's just what I was thinking.
Well, I would like to encourage you to join with us when we're talking to legislators, because we have a lot of pushback in some areas, as in getting the ERA passed. So we need you to join with us when we meet with them, because it's part of not only our belief, but we need to change their beliefs.
And seriously, it was a wonderful call, and I think it's shared sentiments with everybody here, what you were expressing. I think everybody was nodding and enjoying that call very much. We get a surprisingly low number of women calling. We get a much higher number of men calling.
But I think that since the election, more women have been calling.
They
have
sure
you
have.
Noticed that? I really do think
I
that,
hope so.
I,
oh, yeah.
I really believe that.
Well, feel free to join with us, and if you call back, we can give you some phone numbers of how to connect with us, because we need your spirit, and we have experienced some places where it's really difficult to overcome opposition, even though we believe that we have the right, and the proposal, the bill, and the legislation, and the action, and the enforcement are just.
Yes.
Should I call back after the show?
Yes.
In just a few minutes here. We're going to disconnect from you here. We're going to go say our final thank yous and tell you to stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf and Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. Thanks
all
for
right,
your call.
I'll call you back in 10. How's that?
Sounds thank you.
Good.
All right, and we are coming up to the end of the show, and I want to thank our guests, Jane McLean and Alice Kitchen, for coming to talk about the Wall of Women's Achievement and Women's Equality. We're going to have another equality thing going on in August, but right now we've got the Equal Means Equal screening. When?
March 15th at UMKC Student Union, room 402. It is free, open to the public. We encourage you to come and bring your friends, and you will see the 90-minute documentary, and we will have a Q&A afterwards so you can talk about how we all can make changes.
And I got to go see the screening for Women's Equality Week in August last year, and we had a really lively discussion afterwards. Honestly, it's so much better to watch that film with other women than, like, alone at home, just believing that all hope is lost.
To mind.
Yeah, it's like you just sit at home going, go out and watch it with other women and then vent afterwards. It's much better. Yeah. Well, we do have to call it a day, though. We're at the almost 4 o'clock now. But stay tuned for Urban Connections and tune in next week for Every Woman.